Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today, via the wonders of technology, we are traveling to England, and we are going to be talking about one of my favorite beverages, tea. Now, I don't know about the rest of you. I know here in the States we have a tremendous group of coffee lovers, but there are those of us that love the liquid gold of tea. And of course, tea can be many different colors. And my guest today, Tanya M. Buckrell Potts, she has put together a book that not only would make a fabulous gift, but if you love the elegance, the feel of tea time, you're going to enjoy this lady and her magnificent book, Tea and Taste, The Visual Language of Tea. Tanya, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's nice to be here.
Now, you're in London.
I am.
And you yourself, you're a freelance writer, and you really get into fine and decorative arts. Now, how in the world were you able to make this exquisite connection to tea? I mean, the photographs in this book, I wish I was on television. you have clients in both Europe and North America. You've gone to Asia, which has so much in the way of tea ceremony. You know, depending on what country you're in, the love of tea is very strong in Asia.
Yes.
How did you come to put together such a magnificent publication with all of this wonderful information?
Well, to start with, I'm actually Canadian by origin, and 11 years ago when I moved to this country, I was immediately struck by the British love for tea. And being a fine and decorative art historian, having studied both sides, you know, paintings and furniture and silver and porcelain, all these things, I was struck by how much there was here in this country to see. So if you went to a museum, you would see fantastic paintings showing tea, or if you went to a National Trust country house, you would see furniture and porcelain laid out. And I wanted to bring all these ideas together, really, in a publication. I just found it absolutely fascinating myself as well.
Now, let's go a little bit into history with tea. I know I have a number of favorites. I just like tea, whether it's just simple black Lipton tea or it's the fine Earl Grey. There's so many different tea companies around. But give us a little bit of background with tea, because the Asian culture has incorporated this for centuries. What is
Yes.
the earliest bit of information regarding tea and having it as a part of daily life?
Well, the earliest known date that we can associate with tea is 2737 BC, and it's attributed to the Chinese emperor called Shen Nung, who is generally considered the father of Chinese medicine. And indeed, tea was initially considered a medicinal drink.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the story that goes that he was sitting by a campfire and with a hot, you know, a pot of boiling water, and the camellia leaves from a bush next to it flew into the pot of boiling water, and thus the idea of tea was born. It was an absolute mistake. He decided to test it because he enjoyed the aroma from the heated leaves, and discovered all of its medicinal purposes from that moment. And so we can really take it all the way back to Chinese culture.
Now, the fine taste of tea.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different types. There's all kinds of blends. Here in the Seattle area, we have a tea called the Market Spice Tea, which is very unique. And it's got a cinnamony oil in it. You don't need sugar. It's just absolutely one of the most delicious things you could ever drink. And that was a recipe that was developed. But when we go back, that far back, you talk about the camellia bush. To, you know, the Chinese were the first ones to discover, and it was a general, I believe, who found out by accident that if he boiled water, because they had contaminated water then, it's not unlike today. Mm-hmm. But if you boiled the water, his troops didn't get sick. So he made it mandatory. You didn't ever have any water unless it was boiled. So the development of the refined cultivation of tea, it went back so far, but there's so many different types.
Well, there are. And really, I liken tea to wine. And indeed, Stephen Twining of Twining's Tea wrote the foreword to my book, and he touches on that topic, how tea is very much like wine in that depending on the altitude in which it's grown, the soil in which it's grown, it will affect the flavor of the tea leaves itself. And also there's, you know, dark leaves and light leaves, like, you know, white grapes and red grapes in drinking wine. So really, there's such an art to understanding quality of tea. You know, these are really tea masters who would spend literally their whole life tasting tea, just like wine masters would do the same.
Now, you obviously had the chance to interact with Mr. Richard Twining, and I'd love to know more about him, but let's digress for just a moment. You've brought out a point about how tea tasters have quite a refined palate.
Yes.
Now, we've heard about coffee tasters, and in your book, you go through so much wonderful history and the development of Twining's, et cetera, but let's talk about these tea tasters. How do they go through the tasting of tea? How do they develop their palate? Most of us just say, well, we'll take a tea bag, you know, and pop it in a pot of hot boiling water, and that'll do us very nicely, thank you very much. But that's not what they're about.
No. I mean, they would never use tea bags, for one. They would always use loose leaf tea. But it's really an art that takes a lifetime to develop, and tasting teas all the time. And you know, quite like wine tasting, you know, taking in the tea and then literally spitting it out, or, you know, and then moving on to the next taste. And it's really a fascinating topic. I mean, I don't profess to be a tea master myself. What I am is a fine and decorative art historian that looks, you know, I've looked at more the accompaniment to the beverage. So, you know, I would have to defer to somebody like Stephen Twining to really elaborate on that subject a little bit more.
Let's go into an aspect of culture from the English that I dearly love, and that's afternoon tea. Of course, I have my pot of tea in the morning, but I just love the tradition of the afternoon tea where you have your biscuit, which is the term that we would use there for what we call a cookie. But it is a time for relaxation. It's a time for stepping away from the busyness of the day. And often you get out your best silver. This is a time when you savor what you're enjoying. And, of course, the English love milk in their tea. I'm not one. I don't particularly care for milk in my tea. Another, like Mr. Twining, he doesn't like sugar in his. I like a little bit of sweetening in mine, depending on the type of tea.
Right.
When did this become the ritual? I mean, on cruise lines you go and they have high tea. When did this become a part of the English cultural phenomena?
Well, we can really trace it back to the arrival of Catherine of Braganza, who was going to be the future queen to Charles II. She arrived in England in 1662 with a chest of tea accompanying her, because, of course, in Portugal, drinking tea was already an established phenomenon. So through her royal circles, the idea, the custom of taking tea, as they said, disseminated, you know, to other classes. And eventually, I mean, it took literally centuries before it became what it is today and evolved into what it is today. But it was during Queen Victoria's time that high tea became what we know today, with cakes and scones and little, crustless mm-hmm. sandwiches. And it was really a filler, a mini meal, if you will, between lunch and to get you through to dinner. And it was the circle of Queen Victoria that popularized it to the general public.
There's a poem that you have in your book, A Tea and Chocolate Pot, with Moulinet and Candle Cup, restoring breakfast to sup up, porcelain saucers, spoons of gold, dishes that refined sugars hold. Just a quaint little poem there.
Yes.
Now, tea, for a long time, was only for the wealthy
yes.
in England. Where
mm-hmm.
did they get their teas from?
Well, they tea arrived via the East India Company route, and it was Queen Elizabeth I who inaugurated the company, the East India Company, that we've all read and loved to hear stories of. And so the tea came really via that route, and the idea of trade and commerce, and via the tea clippers. So tea coming from China, from Asia, from Indonesia initially, and then during more Victorian days, the 19th century, then tea started to come from India, which is also when that parallels at the time tea became less expensive. So when it was coming from China to England, it was a very, very expensive beverage. It was heavily taxed. Only the ultra-wealthy could afford it. It was kept under lock and key by the lady of the house, usually in a specially made tea chest and caddies inside the chest, and used very sparingly, the same leaves used over and over again until there was no flavor left. And then once tea culture and tea growing, spread to India, it became less expensive. Taxes were levied, and thus it disseminated so that the general public could enjoy tea to a greater extent. And that was really during the time of Queen Victoria in the 19th century.
There was etiquette regarding tea,
mm-hmm.
and you
yes.
have a copy of an exquisite, exquisite painting. It's called Taking Tea by Andrea Landini.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman, who's dressed all in pink with her bonnet, there was a particular distance of the cup from the saucer. I mean, everything.
Mm-hmm.
You look at it today and we just have to smile to ourselves. But etiquette was really very important. And since the wealthy had tea, that was quite a to-do, wasn't it, to know how to sit, to know how to handle a teacup and a saucer and a spoon and all of these things. That became
Absolutely.
Quite a ritual.
Yeah, I mean, most definitely. But the funny thing is how tea culture changed over the centuries. So initially, it was considered quite okay to, for example, leave your teaspoon in the teacup upright, to indicate that you were finished drinking tea. Well, I mean, now you would, during Queen Victoria's time, you would certainly never do that. That would be considered rude. Or in order to cool the tea, in earlier times, the saucer was almost like a small bowl, if you will. Tea would be poured into the saucer to help it cool, and thus allowing the porcelain not to crack. And drinking the tea from the saucer, of course, then during Victorian times, that would have been considered immensely rude. So it's very interesting to think about tea etiquette and tea culture and how it did evolve as it became more accessible, and as the equipage, the tea cups or the tea bowls and the teaspoons changed and modified as tea culture grew and expanded.
I find it interesting whenever you go into a restaurant, an Asian mm-hmm. restaurant, and you're having tea, you have the little bowls, the little cups, but there's no
yes.
handles on them. So obviously the handle attachment to a bowl structure of some kind makes it a lot easier to drink it, in my estimation. But yeah. Even in Asia today, they don't have the handles on the bowls that you have to hold the bowl, and sometimes it's so hot. They do not think slurping is rude in their culture among the Asians.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about how they treat tea, and I know Japanese have a particular attitude about it. What's the difference between the Japanese, the Chinese, and the Koreans?
I wouldn't know the difference between those three cultures when it comes to tea drinking etiquette, but I can say this, that it was really the Europeans who added the handles to the tea bowls, thus creating the teacup. And it was really at that moment in history that the idea really took off, and the phenomenon of tea drinking became something very European rather than something Asian, and became an entity unto its own here in the UK. So, and it's interesting that you note that indeed the tea bowls are still in existence in Asia, whereas in Europe we use tea handled cups.
Mm-hmm. Now, you in your research, you go into a lot of detail regarding the pots for brewing tea. And I'm a fan of the Antique Roadshow. I just love it to see some of the different things that come up, both the British Antique Roadshow as well as the American.
Yes.
And I'm intrigued sometimes with the size of the teapots and how in China they were made of porcelain, and some of them were absolutely huge.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. I mean, again, it goes back to the price of tea. So, initially, in the 1600s, when tea was being imported, I think the first shipment of tea properly arrived in the UK in 1669, directly from Asia, and with it came the porcelain to help drink the tea, and indeed it provided. It was also useful because the tea actually didn't weigh a lot. The porcelain itself would provide weight for the tea ship so that they could sail properly. But the tea and also be put on the bottom level of the boat so that the tea didn't get wet, because obviously if the tea got wet it would ruin the tea. But it's interesting to note that initially teapots were very, very small indeed. I mean, what we would consider a one-cupper today, but back then they were small because the tea was so expensive, and likewise the tea bowls were very small because the tea was so expensive. So you would sit and sip a teeny cup of tea, and you would really savor that little cup of tea because it was literally a shot of tea rather than a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And as tea became more accessible, more affordable, you see the size of the teapot grow, as does the size of the teacup, sorry, the teacup and the teapot. They both grow as we progress sort of through the century. So by the time we hit the mid-1900s, the teapot is a full-blown, huge pot that a whole family can, drink from. And, that is basically what we know and love today.
I know when I was in Russia in 1992, they had metal teapots that were of such a size, and they were in the dining rooms, and they would boil the tea. Worst tasting stuff I've ever had. But I mean, it would just boil and boil and boil and boil, so it made it very, very bitter. But I was just amazed. They had these huge, huge carriers, teapots that were, it would take a man holding it quite literally with both hands, lifting it so that he could pour tea at the table. And, of course, being a Westerner, going through a pot of tea is not a big deal for me. But from what I understand in China, that is not a common practice even today. Mm-hmm. They still have the little pots that they use and that they serve because, just like you said at the beginning of the show, they consider tea a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think if you have too much of it, you can it's not so good for you. It depends on what it is that you drink. So the cultural differences are wonderful, and I've heard about the tea caddies. In fact, I've seen some of them, and they were worth their weight in gold and then some. They were just so very precious. But all of this attitude about tea created even lines of furniture, which you bring out in your book, which I found very interesting. It was the tea cart, so you could bring your tea and your cookies. And again, this was sort of with the Victorian era, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. I mean, things really exploded during the Victorian era. But if I may just go back to the idea of the teapot, there's also what we call the tea kettle. And this is often confused to be a teapot, but this was literally a huge tea vessel for boiling water, and from that the boiling water would be put into the teapot. So often when people are in, say, an antique shop or whatever, they see something like that, it's actually mistaken for a teapot when it's actually a tea kettle. And those tea kettles were placed on specially made tea furniture called a tea kettle stand. And so that instrument would be sitting next to what was the tea table proper, and on the tea table proper, the teapot and all the other equipage would sit. So indeed, yes, I mean, things really exploded during the Victorian period, but we can trace the earliest tea furniture back to the Duchess of Lauderdale, and there's a beautiful museum house here outside of London called Ham House, and the Duchess of Lauderdale's original tea, or closet, we called it a closet, but what would really be sort of like a sitting room equivalent, her original tea furniture still sits in that room. And that tea furniture dates from the mid-17th century. And what it is a low Asian tea table. So if you can picture a low Asian tea table whereby, you know, people would literally be sitting on the floor to be drinking their tea, but then elevated with additional height by English furniture makers next to her Dutch chair and her Asian pottery. So this is all perfectly preserved, and we know this definitively as being some of the earliest tea furniture in this country. And from that, you know, tea tables evolved, and the whole idea of having, individually made pieces of furniture to help, you know, with the presentation of tea came. And so then you have the great furniture makers such as Chippendale and Hepplewhite and Sheraton making their own versions of this exact, you know, what the Duchess of Lauderdale started, you know, in the mid-17th century. So it's quite a fascinating topic.
Well, for those of you listening who are tea lovers, Mr. Twining has some golden rules with tea that I'd like to share. And he said, to make a perfect pot of tea, you may use a teapot made of silver, stainless steel, glass of porcelain, or an earthenware teapot glazed on the inside. And it's typically known as a brown Betty. Mm-hmm. And brewing times vary, 2 to 3 minutes. Medium, small leaves, 2 to 3 minutes. Medium leaves require 4 to 5 minutes, and large leaves require a 6 to 7 minute steeping time. And it's not rude to take off the lid and stir before serving. But this is what interested me. Tea loves the oxygen, so you want to make sure you get cold water from the tap, put it into your kettle to get the maximum oxygenated water. And I've done that for years and didn't even think twice about it. It's just something I did. And you talk about, or Mr. Twining talks about, tea loves cleanliness. Make sure that there's no layer of staining in your teapot. If there is, place 2 teaspoons of bicarbonate of soda in the teapot and add boiling water. Then leave for 2 to 3 hours. It'll leave your pot spotless and, most importantly, without aftertaste. Now, this was something that was new to me, using the bicarbonate of soda, because with any of the Sterling pots, and I have a couple of them, they do get a residue when you have it in the bottom. And I often wondered, what in the world do you put in there? Because I've seen old sets that people had used, and they didn't know how to clean them. And so you have this awful residue in the bottom of the pot. So bicarbonate of soda is totally safe, and it won't hurt it.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, you know, just to touch on the Twining family, it's so interesting that the same family is still in the tea business. I mean, the very first Twining shop was opened on the Strand here in London in 1717. Well, indeed, that very shop still exists, and you can go there and walk in there into the shop and buy, you know, your loose leaf tea. You can buy your Twining tea bags. You can buy other tea paraphernalia. And just to think that that same shop has been there almost 300 years is really quite phenomenal, in my opinion.
Well, I think the book itself, Tea and Taste, is utterly phenomenal. You have recipes in here for lemon cake. You have for Savoy biscuits or cakes, tea cakes, Victoria sandwiches, gingerbread. You've got a directory of traditional tea events that are put on, the most magnificent illustrations and photography, all kinds of notes. I have never seen such an exquisite book on tea. It actually is just such a phenomenal accomplishment, and it's for anyone's library. If they love history, love to travel around the world, find out about a substance that is the mainstay for some of us, I am one of those people. It is just absolutely exquisite. Now, Tanya, do you have a website that people can go to?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for all your kind words. I really do appreciate it, and I appreciate your enthusiasm for my book. So thank you very much, Donna, for that. Well, I would advise people, if they are interested in buying this book, I mean, Amazon sells it on their website. Barnes & Noble, you can buy the book there. I'm not sure if that's on the West Coast of America, but also my publisher, Schiffer Publishing, you can go on their website and purchase, I believe, directly from them as well.
Yes, Tea and Taste, The Visual Language of Tea. Tanya's name, I'm going to spell it out, so if you want to look it up, you can. It's T-A-N-I-A-M Buckrell-Poss, that's B-U-C-K, R-E-L-L, and then P-O-S. It is just absolutely a joy. And again, you can go to Amazon.com, look it up. You'll find it there. And what a gift. If you know of someone that loves lovely things and loves tradition and wants to know more about the magic of high tea or just about the beverage itself, the history, the economics of it, all of it is so fascinating, and so much of it is in this beautifully done book, Tea and Taste. Tanya, thank you for staying up so late in London.
Oh, my pleasure, really.
It's been a joy having you as a guest. Is there anything you'd like to leave with my audience as a final thought before we close out and say goodbye?
Well, I mean, I just would like to say thank you for everybody's attention, and do go and enjoy a cup of tea for all its marvels. It really is the best drink around, and I think it's a good drink to wake up to, and a good drink to go to bed with. So enjoy, everybody.
Thank you so much, Tanya Buckrell-Poss. Thank you, Tanya. It's been a delight having you as a guest. This is Donna Sebo. We are going to be taking a break in just a moment. Hey, you're going to be able to call in if you so desire. Don't forget, Tea and Taste, The Visual Language of Tea, a feast for the eyes, and I think an instigator for tickling the palate with flavors of tea that perhaps you had never even dreamed existed. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share. We'll be right back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Join us at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo Conference and Film Festival, February 13th through 16th at the LAX Hilton, 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles. We are bringing together cutting-edge speakers including David Icke, Sonia Hoquette, celebrity and musician David Carradine, Danyon Brinkley, George Norrie, Sean David Morton, Vashali, and many more. Visit www.consciouslifeexpo.com or call the box office 800-367-5777 for discounted tickets. Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Pete Smith here with OrthoTeb Health Shoes. These funky-looking shoes, invented by a medical doctor, will make you feel better. Who has time to work out these days? Wear our sandals or clogs around the house, go shopping, wear them on the treadmill. You'll burn extra calories. You'll tone and trim the legs, thighs, lower abdomen, rear end, your love handle area. You'll simply feel better. Check them out on the web at orthotebb.net.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. Here are the toll-free numbers you can call into if you'd like to chat with me today and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The numbers are 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Worldwide, you can call into 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. So those phone lines are now open and available to you. Well, the countdown is happening. Yes, the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo that you've been hearing so much about for about a month is coming up this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I'm going to be speaking on Friday evening at 7 o'clock, going to be talking about mind power. I hope if you're in the Los Angeles area that you will come and join me on Friday. And also I'm going to be in booth 537. So we are going to be on Friday playing a Best of Donna with one of the guests that will be appearing at the Conscious Life Expo. So Eric Pearl, you'll be hearing him again on Friday, as I'm going to be very much involved with the activities there. So that will be a pre-recorded program on Friday. But prior to that, hey, it's Valentine's Day on Saturday, and what is going to be the important food of the day on Valentine's Day? Of course, chocolate. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about intentional chocolate. You're going to have to tune in to find out what this means and what it is. Jim Walsh is going to be my guest. He'll be calling in from Mexico, and we're going to talk about this very, very interesting company, and oh, what yummy chocolate. I've had some. It is out of this world. Also, we're going to be talking about the Valentine Treasury of History on Wednesday. This is something that is so much fun because there's so much history that goes behind this holiday. And also, the tradition of giving cards and letting people know how much you care for them and just the thoughtfulness that goes with the holiday itself. That, along with chocolate, can't be beat. So we're going to be going into a bit of that. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about Lincoln. That's right, Abraham Lincoln. We're going to be discussing history. Charles Uckman is going to be my guest. And this is about the Lincoln family. That's right. It's about Lincoln's son, his wife Mary, Todd Lincoln, and the grandkids. And what happened to this family and their legacy that was totally separate from Abraham Lincoln. So I think we're going to have a fascinating week here. So I invite you to join me and be sure and tell your friends. And remember, if ever you want to check on the listing of guests, you could always go to my website, which is DelphiInternational.com. That's DelphiInternational.com. And go into the broadcasting section that is there, and you will be able to find everything that you need to know about who is coming up, as well as on the BBS Radio site. That's right. You can direct check on BBS Radio anytime, and you'll find out about the guests that are going to be coming up. One of the things with this show that I absolutely love to do is to feature and highlight people who are out there making a difference in the world. Too frequently, we will get so wound up with what is not working that we don't often pause to reflect about those many individuals that are making a difference, and they're not waving banners, they're not on the evening news, but they're out there just doing, whether it's working in a soup kitchen, or maybe they're doing something with a school, maybe they're reading to vets in a hospital. It doesn't make any difference. But I came across this information about a young man, and his name is Blake. And when 2006, he was going on a trip. That trip ended up taking him to Argentina. And while he was there, because he observed conditions that were not so pleasant, he realized that he could have a business making shoes. Now, that would sound a little strange, perhaps, but what he did was to develop a concept. For every pair of shoes that he sold, he would give a pair away to a needy child. He said while he was in Argentina, he met so many children who didn't have shoes, had awful, awful sores on their feet. Their feet were in bad condition because they had nothing to insulate them from the ruggedness of the environment they lived in. So what Blake did, he launched a line of simple, colorful, canvas, slip-on type of shoes that were somewhat modeled after the alpargata that is worn by farmers in Argentina. Within 1 year after he opened up this business, the word got out about what he was doing, and he was just going like gangbusters. His first shoe drop, when he was on a tour of rural Argentina, he handed out 10,000 pairs of shoes. 10,000 pairs of shoes. And since then, he has given out another 100,000 shoes on four different continents. And he said, the joy of being able to do this is priceless. There's not enough money in the world to equal the feeling that he gets from it. A concept that has found its own niche. Many times we're not aware that we might be motivated or moved to do something because of what we observe. And Blake was an observant young man, and he found a concept. He observed what the people of the area were comfortable in wearing, what they looked like, and then thought, I could do something like this. Put the concept together. For every pair of shoes, he gave a pair away, and his business is still booming. We should not give up the idea of being creative. It is what makes this world go around. Yes, we may be having some rough economic times right now, but that's nothing new. For heaven's sakes, if you know anything about history, you find it repeats itself over and over again. When things are down, it gives opportunity to look at what we can do differently, how we can handle things differently, what we can design differently. And believe it or not, there are a lot of businesses, we're calling them today green businesses, that are thriving. There are so many negatives that are being promoted, and there are a lot of individuals out there that are doing their darnest, trying to raise their hand and be noticed to say, hey, I've got a way of fixing this. Remember, life is an ongoing experience, and you're going to find there's always going to be the opportunity for doing things better. There's never a straight line. There's always ups and downs. So take heart. Who knows? You may be able to make an invention like this young man did and do something to make this world a better place and to put the smiles on a lot of people's faces just by doing what you feel motivated to do. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. These are toll-free numbers, or 888-815-9756, and that is, the second number is a worldwide number. So give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. There's a cute little joke here that I came across. It said, and it's all about teachers, and of course, you're always having challenges, and there's always so many unique situations the teachers go through. Well, this one involved a seventh grade science class. The topic in the class was Dolly, the sheep that was cloned in Scotland many years ago. And the discussion in the class was all about how scientists removed the nucleus from the sheep egg cell and replaced it with the nucleus from the parent cell. The students were utterly enthralled with everything that was being discussed. One student was really, really excited. The teacher was absolutely floored when this seventh grader said to her, you know, Teach, this is really amazing. I had no idea sheep laid eggs. Ah, yes. The teacher then is wondering, what have I done? Oh, our minds, they do form different pictures, don't they? And, oh, I wanted to share with you, there's some information that I have gotten from a publication by Duncan Crosby about gardening. I don't know about your part of the world. Maybe you're covered in snow and ice right at this moment. But here in the Pacific Northwest, our crocus, our iris, things are just shooting up like crazy. It's amazing to us, and even with the prediction of snow that we might have. So we'll talk about a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And when we come back, but remember, if you wanted to chat with me directly today, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Interested in UFOs, the paranormal, predictions, prophecies, and psychics? Then join us along with David Icke, Sean David Morton, Jim Mars, Richard Hoagland, Danyon Brinkley, Sonia Coquette, and many more at the 7th Annual Conscious Life Expo and Film Festival, February 13th to 16th at the LAX Hilton. Call the box office at 1-800-367-5777 or visit ConsciousLifeExpo.com for more information and discounted tickets.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
This is Pete Smith for OrthoTeb Health Shoes. OrthoTebs are completely heelless, invented by a doctor, and you'll burn 3 times the calories of regular walking in our sandals, 2 times the calories of regular walking in our clogs. They help you tone and trim the entire leg, thighs, buns, lower abs, and love handle area. They offer symptom improvement for people with plantar fasciitis and low back pain. Check them out on the web at www.orthoteb.net.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756. And don't forget, tomorrow we're talking chocolate. Yum. Good stuff. Perfect for Valentine's Day, which is coming up this Saturday. And this is a special story about intentional chocolate. And Mr. Jim Walsh is going to be my guest. Now, I have some information I wanted to share with you about foreclosures, but I thought I would, as I mentioned just before we went on break, chat with you a little bit about gardening. For whatever part of the country you might be in, gardening is something that this is a time you may want to start preparing your soil. You might want to look at being aware of what you need to do for yourself. But if you're like me, you're sort of hesitant because sometimes those freezing temperatures can come back in surprisingly quickly. When you are in the winter phase, it's not quite out of it. So this is information that when I came across it, I thought this would really be some good stuff to share because there are so many plants that you can work with, that you can actually start putting into the ground, especially here in the Pacific Northwest, and if you're on the West Coast, it's pretty much, unless you get further north, where you can start preparing the ground by putting in fertilizer and nutrients so that it's ready. But maybe you have a tree. We've got a tree in our backyard that has just been growing like a weed, and we need to move it because it is in a place that we don't want it to be. It grew from a wild seedling that happened to deposit itself in some very hardy soil, and it has just loved the spot. So we need to move it. One of the things that I did not know is that when you're getting ready to move plants, when you're getting ready to move, for example, a tree, a small baby tree that you know you want to put in a pot so it'll grow and end up being as beautiful as you want it to be, you should use a fork rather than a spade, a shovel. Because when you use the fork, you're going to be able to loosen the soil at a distance from the main stem that's all around the plant and or the tree that you're going to be moving. So you need to be aware that whenever you're transplanting something or if you're wanting to move the soil, create a stimulus for soil. If you have perennials that you have in a certain area, like we have lilies, and they just come up, they're just so gorgeous every year. Well, if you're wanting to move the soil around a little bit, if it's gotten packed down too tight, depending on the type of soil you've got, use one of those very, very large garden forks to move the soil around, and that way you can be gentle. And you're not going to be damaging the root structure that has worked so hard to get itself into its particular place. Plants apparently don't like to have their roots constricted any more than anything else does. We want to make sure that we've got plenty of space for them. So if you're going to be transplanting something, and maybe in your part of the country, this is a good time to start looking at doing that, make sure that wherever you're transplanting it to, there's ample space for that root system to go into. And you want to keep as much soil around the roots when you are moving it to its location. Now, if it's a really large item, for example, if you have a big tree or good-sized tree or, maybe it's a rose bush, it could be any number of rhododendrons, it's got a good-sized root ball on it, not only do you want to have as much soil on that it's been growing in around it, but you might, because it's large, you might want to put it in packing of some kind and tie it securely around the root ball before moving it to whatever new location you're going to be putting it in. And then spread the roots once you've got it in its new location as much as you can without breaking the root ball away. Water it well and let the water soak down before you fill in the hole and firm the ground well. But remember, don't firm it too vigorously. You'll drive out all the air, and the air around the roots is very important. Well, I just wanted to share that little bit of something with you because I'm looking at my own garden, and I'm realizing that is something we need to get busy with pretty soon. But since snow is in the forecast, I think we're going to wait on that one a little bit. I also have some information on foreclosure and some warnings about people that are considered predators on those that are going through that experience, and I will probably be sharing that with you tomorrow because I don't see that I'm going to have enough time today. So I wanted to share a little bit of odds and ends regarding the aspect of time. You know, in our modern day, all of us have watches, we have alarms, we have anything and everything. It's going to keep us on time. Here we have an atomic clock that I have to watch diligently because we have to be aware of programs that are coming up before us, after us, all kinds of things that are going on. Well, this is something that actually hasn't been around for very long. You know, time, they feel, that it was created along with the rest of the universe. Well, a lot of scientists think there was the Big Bang. And that's 13.7 billion years ago. We have developed our concept of time. In some places of the world, their concept of what would be considered time is totally, totally different from how we look at it. Do you know that on November 18th, 1883, it was the American Railway Companies that forced the national adoption of standardized time zones? And it used to be, up until the 1800s, every village lived in its own little time zone with clocks synchronized to the local solar noon. Everybody had different time. I can remember when there were four time zones in Alaska. Amazing stuff. Time is really an illusion. If you've ever seen The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, scientists are not laughing at that concept, though, because there is a new physics that's evolving. Theories suggesting that time emerges from a more fundamental and also a timeless reality. Fascinating, fascinating. Well, regardless, daylight savings time is going to be coming in pretty soon, a lot sooner. We're all ready for it here in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm sure up in other darker spaces, the far northern areas of the United States and many Scandinavian countries, we're already ready for those longer days. The short ones, just a lot of dark. Nope, we're ready for the sunshine. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, let your light shine because you are significant. and who you are and what you are does make a difference. You count. Keep your integrity, be true to yourself, and you'll never find yourself feeling like you don't fit in this experience that we call life. This is Donna Sebo. We'll see you same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.